You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
This is Africa Live.
We have on the phone a caller.
I don't understand, how is it okay and legal to bomb people on a daily basis all over the world, to starve people, and then when some airplanes fly into some towers, a guy gets off his medicine and starts shooting up the mall or something, then the world comes to an end.
Garvey's movement was a serious challenge to imperialism, because if Africans begin to work for our own interests, then we ain't working for theirs.
In the final analysis, white feminism just becomes, I don't know, a leftist feminist tool of colonial domination.
So this discussion has to happen.
This is Africa Live.
Raising up the question of African women in a way that contributes to our liberation and unification.
ABDEP sees our nursing school as an extension of what Marcus Garvey established in the early 1920s with the Black Cross nurses. Our nurses are being trained to not only again be nurses, but to be African international.
This is Africa Live.
I sympathize with these people so much that I hope that as a consequence of what has happened to them, they will be able to look at the rest of the world as humans as well. They will be able to assume that the next victim of a drone attack in Afghanistan may also have parents, may also have community people who will suffer and cry for them as well.
Welcome to Africa Live, which is heard on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and is rebroadcast during the week here on the Uhuru Radio Network. I'm Ron Bob Semple, sitting in as your host this week, and looking forward to chatting with Chairman Amalia Yeshitela, the founder of the Uhuru Movement and Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, USA, and Secretary General Louise Kinshasa of the African Socialist International, who hails from London. Well, the movement has just concluded four intensive weeks of the best sons and daughters of Africa cadre development school. This intensive was attended by comrades from across the globe at the headquarters of the Uhuru Movement in St. Petersburg, Florida. Well, also joining me in studio, Comrade Fenty from Sierra Leone in West Africa. Comrade Magda Johannes, who hails from Stockholm, Sweden. Comrade Antoinette Gomes, who traveled from Norway. And Comrade Will Lockett from the windy city of Chicago in the United States. Comrades, welcome to Africa Live. Comrade Fenty.
Uhuru.
How were you made aware of the Uhuru movement's existence and work in Sierra Leone?
Uhuru, comrades, just as Rod Bob Simple have made introduction, I'm Fenty Tolly from Sierra Leone. I came in contact with the Uhuru movement in the year 2005 when they went to Sierra Leone, trying to make sure they go there onto the ground to know things that are happening with the people in the other side of the country, in the other side of the continent. So they held a meeting, and this meeting was made known by elders of the community, wherein they make several advertisements, passing out flyers. So I was able to catch up with this flyer. I read it, so I attended their meeting. Then from there, I automatically become a member of the African People's Socialist Party, or the Uhuru Movement.
There are some 45 million people in this West African country. What are some of the obstacles, Comrade Fenty, that you have encountered when attempting to convince others of the importance to join the struggle for the revolution to achieve freedom of the African people?
Very important question. As you know, Sierra Leone have gone through 11 years of brutal war from 1991 to the year 2001. People are looking at the war in Sierra Leone that has taken place is a kind of a true revolution, but actually it is not a true revolution, because people have gone through so many pains and so many problems. So they thought the revolution we had in Sierra Leone was a true revolution, but actually it wasn't a true revolution, actually, because The war was baseless. We are unable to get the truth why the war came into the country, even though we had so many other issues that is because of corruption and other things. Now, we trying to make up the revolution in Sierra Leone to make sure bringing people into politics, we find it very difficult. Because at any time we talk of the revolution, people think we are going back to the former ruthless war that we had in the country, which does not signify anything like a revolution. So we find it very difficult actually to make sure we convince people around the question of making a revolution to bring in change.
Comrade Matt, why did you feel it necessary to travel over 4,000 miles from Stockholm, Sweden, to attend this 2014 Cadre Development School?
I've been a member of the party, the African People's Socialist Party, for around a year, and I recognize that in this time when imperialism is in crisis, it's not enough to just be a member of the party, but we have to be able to, you know, build cadres and become leaders, because we look up to the leadership, but we have to become what we look up to as well. And I know that there's nothing else, you know, that can be compared to this cadre intensive in St. Petersburg. And this training is not something that, you know, have been provided since I don't know when, but I know that we can't get this training anywhere else. And if you want to become a cadre, and if you want to see freedom in our lifetime, it's our duty as African workers, you know, to be a part of this cadre.
What are a few of the things that you have learned from these exercises that will help you to open the minds of the comrades back in Stockholm when you get there?
What I've learned the most is the significance of being disciplined and being accountable, because what we usually see is liberalism and, you know, people doing their own thing. But we as African People's Socialist Party, we are not like any other, you know, organization. And we are a revolutionary organization, which means that we can't build, like Secretary General Louise Kinshasa said before, if Africa want to be free, we need to know the significance of being disciplined. We can't build a nation if we are not disciplined. And that's one of the most important things that I've learned during this process, and being accountable to the unit that we work with.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Africa Live with yours truly, Ron Bob Semple, sitting in this week. Joining me in the studio are comrades who have traveled to the United States to attend the 2014 Cadre Intensive, which was held for the last 4 weeks at the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida. Now we'll turn to our sister Antonetta. And Antonetta, you were a member of the unit that I was in for the past 2 weeks, I should say, because I did join the intensive a little late. Antonetta, share with our listeners, please, the story that you shared with us when that light went off. I think you were watching television or the internet. There's a light that went off that told you, wait a minute, now I think this is something that I need to attend. Share with us that story, please.
Uhuru. I was, what can I say, 5 months ago, I was searching on internet about some kind of organization, some kind of, I don't know, about some united about black people in Norway, because I'm living in Norway for 3 years and it was totally strange for me. Don't have black friends, don't have any kind of contact with black people, and was totally strange for me. And I was thinking, honestly, I was getting crazy, and I was searching, I was believing that must have something. And when I search on internet, on Facebook, some kind of thing, and I didn't expect to find like some revolutionary organization, honestly, because what can I say, in Norway we have this kind of groups like Angolans in Norway, and they organize some kind of party for Angolan people. Of course, every kind of every Africans can go there, but it's more like people from Angola, we eat the food from Angola and the music from Angola and stuff like this. We have also the Jamaicans in Norway. They organize Jamaican parties with Jamaican food, and a lot of Jamaican people go to these parties. Everyone can go to these parties. So I was thinking like, okay, must have something else, must have something more. I was searching something like people from Guinea-Bissau in Norway, but I didn't find. And I try to find something else, like, I don't know, something like... I didn't think about something revolutionary, but something where black people can unite sometimes and talk and have a great conversation and, I don't know, make some tours. And when I found Impudam, first I found Impudam Chicago. And after I saw that they have Impudam in Belgium, have Impudam in Colombia, and I start to search more, and I saw Impudam Stockholm. I saw Impudam Stockholm. I was like, must have Impudam Norway. Okay, I didn't find Impudam Norway. I found Impudam Stockholm, and there was like, tada! Yeah.
For our listeners who don't know what Impudam is or stands for, yeah. What does it stand for?
Impudam is like international
Democratic
Uru movement.
That's correct. Okay. Now, you were born in Guinea-Bissau.
No, I'm born in Portugal.
Okay, you're born in Portugal.
Yes.
Okay. What took you to Norway?
Huh?
What took you to Norway?
Well, the situation in Portugal wasn't easy, and my sister was in Norway for a while, so I decided to go to Norway also.
Okay. Has this intensive transformed you, and if so, how?
yeah, this intense
you're listening to
is good. I get more knowledge. What can I say? I think this intense give me more motivation.
Okay.
Yeah, and stay with comrades with the same views.
Information, ideas,
that I have is very nice.
Cause the Burning Spear newspaper offers you
some, I think sometimes people think that you are crazy. Honestly, from where I live, people think that I am crazy. So,
why do you think so?
Your 1 year subscription.
Honestly, I think I'm the only one who have this mentality about the union of black people and on the most pressing something like. The lives of
African workers. So do you think you'll find things a bit difficult when you get back to Norway? When you talk with the comrades that you would. Meet or associate with there in Norway?
No, my mentality has changed a little bit here.
Okay.
I grow up a little bit more. So
okay, great.
If the things will be more difficult, maybe I will know how to struggle with this. So.
Right. Yeah. Skimmer Comrade Friendly, I think you wanted to jump in to make a comment.
Yeah, well, the only comment I want to make here, we African people, it does not matter where it belongs, you know? Either you are from Africa at home or you are anywhere in part of the world. We are just part of the dispersed nation.
Either at home or abroad, as Marcus Garvey says.
Yeah, you know, it does not matter. All this that has happened is due to colonialism, you know. We never ask people to, you know, to bring us around the world and, you know, and place us all over the place. But it took us forcibly. So it's like, Antonita, all what I'm saying here is, I don't think if you need to find it very difficult, you know. In taking the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, which is Impudam in Norway. You know, you are just part of you know, the struggle. So if you go home again and you are able to struggle to get more of Africans there, I'm sure the struggle will take place. And we shall surely win. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Thank you, Comrade Fenty. Comrade Will Lockett, as a young man living in Chicago, which has been experiencing an increase of violence on our African communities. What political education can you take back to the Windy City to empower our young brothers and sisters.
Yeah, due to the Uhuru movement, it's a wealth of information that completely won me over from my first experience. I first came in contact with the party through the Black is Back Coalition, and I found the Uhuru movement, and I began to listen to Omali Yeshitela's speeches, and I think I listened to all 200 speeches in about 2 weeks. and the knowledge gained through this cadre intensive in concerning violence in Chicago is that, you know, the imperialist power, that's the violence. And actually in Chicago, the number of murders, it really isn't more than other years or other decades. It's been more in the media, so it seems like more, but looking at the actual numbers, it's about the same as it's been for the last 40 years.
You said you listened to a lot of speeches by Chairman Omali Yeshitela. What is it about the chairman that really changed your mind on certain issues?
In a lot of ways, it's deepened my knowledge. And it's a lot of things he says, it's like, that's what I've been trying to say. But, I didn't have the words or, the vocabulary even to articulate it like that.
Mm-hmm. And the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is having its international conference.
It's all the way around, especially in the intensive, the way to make sure that through democratic centralism that it's a way of being organized and ensure that, the majority of African people, their interests are in power and in place. And, those interests are being served.
Were you intimidated in any way by this intensive?
The conference is free and open to the public.
I knew it was going to be a lot of work. But I'm actually excited and ready to take it on. I knew it would be challenging in Philadelphia, and not
it's now time to
something
order
to
your
get a lot of,
of,
you know, rest, but be challenged in a lot of ways, physically and mentally, and but all in the best interest of myself and my people. So it's definitely worth it.
You're listening to Africa Live. I'm your host this week, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Africa Live is aired on Sundays from 11 until 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and then is rebroadcast during the week. You can always check our schedule on uhurunews.com or uhururadio.com. In the studio with us are four comrades who have made a trip to St. Petersburg, Florida for the 2014 intensive that has just been concluded, and we're just getting a recap as to what effects it has had on them, and we'll return with our comrades after these few words of importance.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
Here's edutainment on the water you should not miss. It's the 4th annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise for 6 days from December 14th through 20th, 2014, aboard the Carnival Breeze leaving out of Miami, Florida, and stopping in Grand Turk, Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and Nassau, Bahamas. Edutainment on board will feature Omali Yeshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International, and renowned actor Ron Bob Semple with The Spirit of Garvey. For more details and to place your booking for the 4th Annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call Freedom Horizons Travel Agency at 866-708-4009. The exclusive travel agency for the 4th Annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise. Log on to uhurulegacycruise.org for itinerary and pricing information. Call Freedom Horizons today at 866-708-4009, 866-708-4009, or visit uhurulegacycruise.org, because if you miss it, you'll regret it.
There are more U.S. reporters covering the New York Yankees than there are covering the entire continent of Africa.
And it's a shame when we as African people, we make up damn near the majority of the city, but we have to fight to get on white ruling class media.
That tells you something about the priorities of the news media in this country.
We are engaged in a war of ideas.
Warning.
You're locked in to Uhuru Radio.
Stand by.
Right here, right now.
APSP, uhururadio.com.
All right, guys. I and I no mix with the wicked men. I and I said trampled it.
Uhuru Radio was envisioned as a means by which our community, our people, our party, our revolutionary aspirations could contend with the ruling class in this war of ideas that contributes to maintaining the oppression of African people. Part of what African internationalism, Garveyism in the 21st century is about is ending that isolation, is bringing African people together in common struggle. And Uhuru Radio, it allows Africans in any place in the world to have access to other Africans so that reinforcement are always on the way, no matter where it is that we're struggling and no matter what may be the temporary setbacks.
Finally, the station you've been looking for.
Uhuru Radio. No degrading lyrics.
I never call you my bitch or even my boo. There's so much in the name and so much more in you.
Progressive.
Any lover I do other. So you buy her a diamond if I want to die. Oh, don't you think there's something wrong with it?
And millions of dollars leave Sierra Leone in the form of diamonds, yet the people who mine the diamonds make 30 cents a day and a cup of rice. That's the reality all over Africa.
And revolutionary.
AFDEP is an organization of the Uhuru movement that was built in 2007 in order to organize African doctors, nurses, scientists, engineers, and other skilled Africans around the world to coordinate a variety of development projects that work to transform the miserable conditions of existence that have been imposed on our people around the world.
APSP, uhururadio.com.
Uhuru Radio is developing a new programming schedule to include more music, cultural, educational, political, and multilingual programs from around the world. We are professionalizing the technical delivery of our programming, improving our sound quality and presentation. We're working to make our audio stream more accessible through mobile devices and distribution networks. This is your media, Uhuru News, Uhuru Radio, and the Burning Spear newspaper, the voice of the International African Revolution. We rely on your support to get the truth out about our struggle for freedom. Become a member today. Your donation of any amount will make a difference.
APSP, uhururadio.com.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Ishitela's new book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman Omali's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700, and your copy will be personally signed by the author.
Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom.
The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is having its international conference in Philadelphia on August 16th and 17th, and you are invited. It's all happening at Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles at 832 North Broad Street. Theme of the conference is Resist U.S. Wars and Occupations in the U.S. and Abroad. Reparations Now. Learn from Chairman Omali Ishitela of the African Socialist International. See Ron Bob Simple as Marcus Garvey. Hear Glenn Ford speak on Ukraine and the Crisis of Empire. Listen to Lisa Davis expose the health attack on our community. The conference is free and open to the public. For more information, call 727-821-6621. Again, 727-821-6621 or visit blackisbackcoalition.org. Don't forget, August 16th and 17th in Philadelphia, Black is Back.
Yes, I certainly hope you can attend that Black is Back conference in Philadelphia, August 16th and 17th. I'll be joining Chairman Omali Ishitela and looking forward to seeing you. Brothers and sisters there in Philadelphia. Welcome back to Africa Live. I'm Ron Bob Semple, your host this week. And we are chatting with four comrades who have made a trip to the United States. In three cases, to the United States, and one lives in Chicago. And we're discussing their reaction to the 2014 Cadre Development Intensive that was held over the last 4 weeks at the headquarters of the Uhuru Movement, the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida. Comrade Fenty, mentioned that you hail from Sierra Leone in West Africa, and during one of the sessions you shared with the brothers and sisters a disturbing scenario, and I'm referring to the minerals that are being stolen from Sierra Leone via trains. Share with our listeners that experience that you shared with us, please.
Thanks, your brother Ron Bob Simple, for bringing us back again into the program for the second session. I would like to share this because we have been experiencing a loot of our resources since the 60s, and up to now we are still experiencing the same loot of our resources, you know. It came a time sometime back in 2013 when the leadership of the APSP sent a delegation to go down to Sierra Leone to make sure they go through the work already that is on the ground that the Uhuru Movement have established, you know, because the Uhuru Movement have been able to establish schools, some clinics, and they have some projects wherein they have some empowerment activities going down for youths who do not have the opportunity to, you know, to attend a normal school. So we had to take a kind of a journey around the province to look at some of the horrible things that are actually happening in the country. And it happens that we came across an organization called the African Mineral. Well, the African Mineral went down to Sierra Leone, not only to at least help the people, but to make sure they continue the loot, because this African Mineral is a company owned by the British. And the British, and they employ the Ukrainians, and they went there to actually, exploit the land by extracting our minerals, which is the iron ore. And they have several of their trains, and I think the longest train is about 120 coaches or wagons, as you may call it here. And we saw the looting of our resources, daylight. And this looting has been on daily basis, 24/7, you know, on daily basis. And according to my analysis, the length of the train is about 110 coaches, and each of these coach or wagon carries about 78,000 tons of sweat. So you can imagine, if you multiply that one by 110, those of you who are mathematicians up there, if you multiply 78,000 tons of wagon as to 110, then you can imagine the amount and number of resources being taken from the soil at Sierra Leone on a daily basis.
What are these minerals?
This iron ore, you know, and You know, iron is one of the most precious minerals in the world today, which imperialism or however you call them, a capitalist, they always go in to make sure they get, you know, to help them achieve what they want to achieve and leave we the Africans into poverty.
Who is responsible for extracting these minerals from the mountains there in Sierra Leone?
Oh, well, this is not something we need to keep or hide. All what we know, if Sierra Leone has got a government, and this government is being ruled by a president and his cabinet members, we believe, and I strongly believe, that those that are responsible, these are the neo-colonial petit bourgeoisie in the name of the president and his cabinet members, because they run the deal. And you can find out that even these activities, the areas wherein this mining is being done, those areas are being owned by the local people or by the traditional people. Mm. And you go there, you look at the social status of the people, it does not reflect. Because I believe as a revolutionary, as somebody who have the people in mind, that at least we are expecting the best to have come from those areas. But it's like this mining company, they work together with the government side by side to make sure they continue to exploit the people in the way in which the people are today. We still remain poor.
Sister Magda, when you saw that video, what was your reaction?
I've seen that video before at speaking of Impidam that we talked about earlier. It's called, Impidam had a radio show before that was called like a video broadcast, and it was called ARN, African Resistance Now. And I remember that Comrade Diop showed that video that we saw during this workshop. And my reaction is still the same when I see it, because you get very, you know, it's easy to say that, it's one thing to say that, okay, we know that, you know, the West, you know, Europe and US, they take resources from Africa, etc. But when you see the video, you can see, I mean, you get another perspective of it, because it's one thing to read it and to know about it, but when you see it, you get more, you know, outrage. To say the least. So,
Comrade Antoinette, you saw it for the first time. What was your response when you saw it?
Honestly, it's like, my really opinion is like, if this still happens, is because the African petty bourgeoisie, they permit this, because they could, I don't know. I mean, we are all Africans. I don't understand. I just don't understand. And I just don't understand this kind of ideas or mentality that African petty bourgeoisie have for permit this, because they under their own they wanna have advantages for themselves, but they can contribute to the African nation and still have their own advantage like they want, honestly. But and how we as a people, we have to fight against this African petty bourgeoisie. I mean, I know, like, they have power because they are organized with white people, and white people gives them the power, and I don't know, what can I say?
Comrade Fenty, you did mention that this has been going on, it goes on 24/7, just pilfering these minerals. How long has this been going on?
This is the second year, and according to foreign programs and newspapers, the media that we've been reading, listening to radios, in fact, the question is how long is this extraction is going to take place? Because according to the newspapers we've read and the media informations we've been getting, and I, as a revolutionary, a member of the APSP, which is the African People's Socialist Party and a member of the Huru Movement, we've been in participation, making sure we make call to voice out our own opinion, you know.
What kind of response have you been getting?
The response we have been getting is not even clear up to date, because we had some people say that the contract is for 92 years. And some said
92 years.
Yes, and some said the contract
24/7.
Yeah, and some said the contract is for 72 years. But based on a paper I have read,
All what I saw is 72 years, minerals are going to be extracted continuously on daily basis. And let me say this, comrade. Now, we've seen this extraction being taking place within the course of this 2 years, and they are still telling us that the mining has not even started. All what they're now doing is a kind of making a clearance, making a foundation in order for the work to at least start in the next coming 5 years. So it is horrible.
In the video where the camera was located, we just saw these coaches and coaches and coaches filled with these minerals. Where are they going?
We have a place where we call the harbor. Now, okay. Yes, the harbor is a place wherein one of the largest ships we have ever seen in the country harbors itself, right at the sea, there, right at the Atlantic Ocean, waiting for these minerals to be taken.
Where?
To be taken across the globe. It could either be in the US here or it could be Europe. But all what we know, the UK front is in lead. And if the UK front also employ the Ukrainians to participate in the extraction of this mineral, we believe they have a share. And we know UK and the American government, these are partners. Wherever you see UK, America is there. So we are also expecting the US government to have a share of that.
What's your take on this, Will? You're a young man out of Chicago, and now that you are a part of the movement, when you experience something like this removing of all of these minerals from the continent, what passes through your mind?
Rage. We see there's a photo where it's a map of the world, and they show Africa dug out, and all of it's like a pile of rocks on top of the United States and Europe, and it just shows all of the stolen resources from Africa that goes to build Europe and the United States, and it's reminded me of that photo and being in downtown Chicago, the skyscrapers, all this wealthy areas, Mercedes-Benz going down the street. But, it's not for the masses of African people. It's for whites. And so that's what goes through my mind.
What drastic measures you think need to be taken to prevent this kind of pilfering? I know you're way across on the other side of the pond. But what do you think needs to be done?
We need to get organized with the Uhuru movement and get all our money back, our resources, and govern ourselves in the interest of the working class of our own people.
Sister Antoinette, you want to add to that? No, you don't think so. Magda, you're holding down the forces there in Stockholm, Sweden. What kind of obstacles do you run into? What kind of resistance do you get when you're trying to encourage comrades to get involved in this work and this movement?
Yeah, Uhuru. One of the biggest problems that we have is that people live relatively, comfortable in Sweden. And some people
relatively
would say, yeah, but it depends on, who you're comparing to. If I would, we've been having outreach here in South St. Pete, and I can see the conditions are totally different, but there's still sameness in the, oppression that we face. But, there's different levels of oppression. And, people here in South St. Pete, for example, when you talk about what we need to do and, stuff like that, they can relate on another level, and I can see it when I talk to them on why we need to get organized, etc. But in Sweden, it's usually they try to find a way to integrate into the Swedish society rather than, building our own organization.
Mm-hmm.
Because in comparison to the US, there's a history here, and white people know it as well in America, that there's a history of, you know, black power organizations rising up during different times in history. But in Sweden, there's no history of black power organizations. We have, you know, because people started coming from Africa to Sweden maybe in the 80s. Some might came in the 70s, but mm-hmm. the majority, the masses came in the 90s, you know, from eastern part of Africa, Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia. So I find it hard to... One of the biggest obstacles is that people don't feel comfortable with building our own organization, because that would separate us, you know, from, you know, the white population. Because we usually have like anti-racist organizations or, you know, leftist organizations, feminist organizations. Those are usually the organizations that Africans join. So we don't have a history of a black power organization or anything to that effect.
Well, as you know, both myself and Chairman O'Malley Shatila were in Sweden in October of 2012
yes.
on the Marcus Garvey Legacy Tour. And the evening that we presented, there was a lot of enthusiasm there among the Africans and non-Africans. Does that enthusiasm still exist?
Yeah, it exists in some circles.
Okay.
I mean, the people that we've been seeing now with time, that many Africans that are involved in, you know, different organizations, I don't know how to express it really, but, you know, many people are in the, you know, opportunist organizations. So we, you know, try to win those forces in some ways. And like you said, there was a lot of enthusiasm mm-hmm. during that night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But usually when we contact people, they seem to be very excited. But then when it comes to, that's the difference also between, you know, the African People's Socialist Party and the Uhuru movement overall, that you can't just talk, but you actually have to put in some work. And that's where, you know, the contradiction lies. But we find people, but we have to build the African People's Socialist Party. And that's a challenge, but it's not impossible. But we have to be consistent, you know, with our outreach, because I know that Africans out there want to hear African internationalism.
Am I hearing you say that you may be faced with challenges when you get back to Sweden?
Yeah. I mean,
what kind of challenges do you foresee?
What
kind of challenges do you foresee in trying to win the minds and the souls of the Africans there?
I mean, I don't think it's a big difference in that way when you compare to other countries. It's, you know, Africans and other oppressed peoples, we are so colonized mentally. Mm. So you have to... you got to use different strategies, you know, in order to convince, you know, the African masses that this is the solution. And I remember we had a workshop where the chairman was talking about the history of the party. And I remember that we were talking about what happened, you know, in the 80s, 90s, and, you know, the rebellion here in St. Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that... even if people are not so engaged, you know, in the organization maybe here, they still felt the need to defend the Uhuru House. And that's because they know the importance of, you know, they know that people in the Uhuru movement work hard. And that's a result of being consistent all the time. So even if we face the challenges in Sweden that we're going to face, I think the answer lies in us being consistent with forces, you know, that we see potential in.
Correct me if I'm wrong, when you mentioned the rebellion here in St. Pete, mm-hmm. were you referring to when the Uhuru House was attacked?
Yes.
Okay. What impact did that have on you? And I'm going to ask each of you that question. When you saw that video?
Yeah, one of the first things that come to mind is that the security lies in the masses, because I think it's hard to, especially for me, sometimes coming into this work, it can be hard to, even if how can I put it? Even though everyone is not in the African People's Socialist Party, they can still see that the organization represents them.
The
and I think that that's one of the biggest lessons, and that you shouldn't underestimate anyone, because they defended the Uhuru House like that was their own. You know,
what impact did that have on you, Will, seeing that video?
Oh, it was very inspiring, and it shows the power in the masses of people, and to see the police leaving with their tail, you know, heads down and tails tucked between their legs, you know, that's it gives a lot of hope, and it shows that you know we have power, and with the Uhuru movement, it, you know, it fights on several fronts politically and the people, you know, with force, you know, it's amazing to see.
Antonetta, your reaction to seeing that video when the police attacked the Uhuru House and using tear gas and trees or part of trees are being burnt. What impact did that have on you?
Well, you know when Charmaine says about the sense of sameness?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the video shows that. I mean, people who is not part of the movement, people who is not part from of the party, but they were there and they defend the house like it was their own house. And, you know, black people, when they are united, they are fascinating. So I think the video shows this. So,
number 20.
Yeah, well, seeing the video about the St. Pete battle in the Uhuru House just reminds me about the leadership, and also reminds me about the significance of the Uhuru movement here. You can see that a good number of the people that came and stood hand in hand with the Uhuru movement to make sure they repel the attacks that was being made by the police. A good number of them were not members of the Uhuru movement, but the people realized that the Uhuru movement is here and it's working for them. I think what inspired me is the leadership that the organization actually creates. The people realize that they have an organization that is here for Africans on the ground. And I think that inspired me most because had it not been for the leadership, had it not been for the Uhuru movement work around the community, the people wouldn't have come to make sure they stand and repel all these attacks. And that also inspired me on the unity of the people within the community they have, you know, towards the struggle. And I believe, Africans in this community, they do realize that they have some problems. They do realize they face series of problems in their lives. The only thing is that to make sure we continue to win them, you know, into the work. You know, the people can get organized easily, provided the leadership is strong. Because just as the Africa internationalism is saying, we believe in practice. That if we continue to practice to make sure all that we learn here, we will be able to at least win, you know, at the masses. So that's inspired me much, you know.
We've just got about 10 more minutes left on this segment. And we'll be chatting both with Chairman Amalia Shetela and Secretary General Louise Kinshasa during the second hour of Africa Live. I'm Ron Bob Semple, sitting in this week as a host of Africa Live, and we're chatting with four of the comrades who attended the 2014 Intensive Development School. It was conducted at the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida, for the past 4 weeks. In the few minutes that we have left, comrades, and we're going to go around, roll around the table, starting with you, Comrade Fenty. Just give us a summary of what the past 4 weeks have meant to you.
Oh, well, to me, one, is a pleasure for me to be here. This 4 weeks intensive cadre school teaches me a lot. And it reminds me of the challenges, you know, of the time warp that the chairman has been talking about. That this time and all the time else, we really need to do our work to make sure that we know I go back home and organize the people in order to make sure that the revolution which we are talking about, because we are talking about power and African internationalism, I think that has been the mission of capturing power and uniting African people, you know, and the nation under the leadership of the African working class. Well, what has motivated me most is the presentations and the videos that have been shown, which reminds me of even the 11 years of war that has happened in my country. Above all, I have learned a lot about what how I should be a good leader, and how would I be able to, you know, organize my people and to lead them out, you know, into the struggle to make sure subsequently we win what the freedom and the liberation of we the Africans wherever we live and wherever we find ourselves. I think I've learned a lot, and it's actually meaningful.
Comrade Antonetta?
The time we expand here, we was kind of... I want motivation to continue, to learn more, to struggle, to organize people, to always have hope in my people, and we can always try to organize them and struggle with them, and it's like we always say we are just one Africa, one nation, nothing else. If I have to insist on something, it will be on organize my people, and that's it.
In other words, you're saying you have work to do.
Sorry?
You're saying you have work to do when you get back to Norway?
Yes.
Looking forward to it?
Yes.
All right. Come with Magda.
Uhuru. These 4 weeks have meant a lot because, we've been talking about one of the biggest struggles we're going to face is the struggle with self. And in order to, be able to organize other people and to convince other people of the significance of, building the party and building the Uhuru movement, you gotta be convinced yourself. And having workshops around, democratic centralism, combat liberalism, dialectical materialism, and all of the other workshops have really inspired me. And, to be able to work in a unit, being accountable to comrades, mm-hmm. because that's, you gotta be able to work in a unit, because if we can't even do that, how are we going to organize, Africans outside of the organization?
How important is that accountability that you're talking about?
Accountability is a must, because when you're talking about building a revolutionary organization, it's not like being in any other organization. It means something else to be in a revolutionary organization. And one of the, characteristics of being in a revolutionary organization is that it requires more from you as an individual. You got to be disciplined, you got to be accountable, and many other stuff. And, that's what the intensive have taught me.
Comrade Will.
Uhuru.
What has this experience done to and for you?
Yeah, I know just in this short time I've seen myself push past self-imposed limits. For instance, running, I was able to run more than I thought I could. And this was within 2 weeks. And it makes me think of all the other self-imposed limits that I might have put upon myself. I choose to take on the responsibility of building the Uhuru movement in Chicago, and it's not an easy task, but going through the intensive and being pushed by the other cadres has been a good experience. And that motivation you know, was able to push me past a lot of my limits, and I hope to take that as well as the lessons learned, the historical analysis of the past African revolutions and their the good and bad, their mistakes, and being able to bring, you know, bring this organization on in a good way where it needs to be.
How challenging you think this is going to be to you when you get back to the Windy City?
Well, I think it'll be as challenging as before, but I'll be better prepared to meet those challenges and you know, make more successes.
Well, Comrade Will, Comrade Magda, Comrade Antonetta, and Comrade Fenty, thank you for joining us here on Africa Live. I'm Ron Bob Semple with you. Please stay tuned. We're going to be chatting with Chairman Amalia Shatella and Secretary General Louise Kinshasa. Comrade Fenty, you wanted to get into the last few words?
You know, just to say, we appreciate the process and we also appreciate the leadership. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
There are more U.S. reporters covering the New York Yankees than there are covering the entire continent of Africa.
And it's a shame when we as African people, we make up damn near the majority of the city, but we have to fight to get on white ruling class media.
That tells you something about the priorities of the news media in this country.
We are engaged in a war of ideas.
Warning.
You're locked in to Uhuru Radio.
Stand by.
Right here, right now.
APSP, UhuruRadio.com.
All right, then. I and I no mix with the wicked men. I and I say trample the...
Uhuru Radio was envisioned as a means by which our community, our people, our party, our revolutionary aspirations could contend with the ruling class in this war of ideas that contributes to maintaining the oppression of African people. Part of what African internationalism, Garveyism in the 21st century is about is ending that isolation, is bringing African people together in common struggle. And Uhuru Radio, it allows Africans in any place in the world to have access to other Africans so that reinforcements are always on the way, no matter where it is that we're struggling and no matter what may be the temporary setbacks.
Finally, the station you've been looking for.
Uhuru Radio. No degrading lyrics.
I never call you my bitch or even my boo. There's so much in the name and so much more than you.
Progressive. And you love her like you are. So you buy her a diamond if I want to die. Oh, don't you think there's something wrong with it?
And millions of dollars leave Sierra Leone in the form of diamonds, yet the people who mine the diamonds make 30 cents a day and a cup of rice. That's the reality all over Africa.
And revolutionary.
AFDEF is an organization of the Uhuru movement that was built in 2007 in order to organize African doctors, nurses, scientists, engineers, and other skilled Africans around the world to coordinate a variety of development projects that work to transform the miserable conditions of existence that have been imposed on our people around the world.
APSP, UhuruRadio.com.
Uhuru Radio is developing a new programming schedule to include more music, cultural, educational, political, and multilingual programs from around the world. We are professionalizing the technical delivery of our programming, improving our sound quality and presentation. We're working to make our audio stream more accessible through mobile devices and distribution networks. This is your media, Uhuru News, Uhuru Radio, and the Burning Spear newspaper, the voice of the International African Revolution. We rely on your support to get the truth out about our struggle for freedom. Become a member today. Your donation of any amount will make a difference.
APSP, UhuruRadio.com.
Tune into Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Uhuru Radio Network. We examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. If you're not listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network, then your radio is not on.
You're listening to UhuruRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Well, welcome back to Africa Live. I'm your host this week, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Africa Live is heard on Sundays from 11 until 1 p.m.
It's now time to order your
signed
copy.
Until 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then rebroadcast during the week. For the last hour, you had the privilege of listening to four of our comrades who traveled from other parts of the world to attend the 2014 intensive school, development school here at the headquarters of the Uhuru Movement in St. Petersburg, Florida. And joining me for the second half of the broadcast this week are the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, Chairman Omali Yeshitela, the founder of the Uhuru Movement, and the Secretary General of the African Socialist International. And he is based in London, and I'm referring to Louwezi Kinshasa. My brothers, welcome to Africa Live.
Thank you very much.
It's it was a rewarding hour I just spent with those four comrades, and it is heartening to realize the impact that this intensive has had on each and every one of them. Chairman, this intensive has been, I'm sure, a process that you wanted to have an impact on our community, on our members of the movement and non-members of the community. What was that impact?
Well, one of the things that we've been involved in for almost 40 years, two generations, has been trying to recover from the brutal, murderous defeat of the revolutionary struggle that black people were involved in all around the world. Our fight for happiness, for the return of our resources, for an end to various forms of slavery, sometimes called colonialism, sometimes called Jim Crow segregation, any number of things. And this struggle was met by a cruel and brutal response by white power around the world. In the United States, of course, we know not only about things like the cattle prods that were used against Africans for simply wanting to register to join the Democratic Party, but the violence, the bombings, we know about the assassinations of people like Fred Hampton and Mark Clark in Chicago in 1969. We know about the assassination of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, but similar things were happening around the world. Patrice Lumumba was murdered in Congo in 1961. Again, just the process of trying to win back our happiness, our freedom, and the return of our stolen resources. Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana was overthrown in 1966, and we believe was poisoned that he died later after that. Che Guevara, who was a magnificent leader in South America, was wounded and captured in 1967 by U.S. Agents and was murdered after he was captured. So our struggle met a serious and brutal defeat. And for years, we had the consequence of a population being on the back foot in terms of the loss of morale, loss of self-confidence in being able to win our freedom, the destruction of our organizations, the assassination of our leaders, the dispersal of members of organizations, the stuffing of prisons throughout the United States with African people to guarantee that the revolution would never occur again, the imposition of a drug economy on our communities by this government so that thousands and thousands of Africans lost their lives, their futures to drugs. So the struggle we've been involved in since that time has been one to try to recover and rebuild a movement, because we have not achieved our freedom. We have not won back our happiness and return of our resources. And we have to be organized in order to do that. If we're going to have an organization that can take on such a powerful opponent as the United States government, all of the white power world, then you're going to have a special people who have committed to making the process of winning our freedom something that is their profession. And it's not something that amateurs can do. Amateurs, anybody can participate. But in terms of leading this kind of movement, we have to have people who've made this a profession. And so the development of cadres, skilled people who willing, first of all, to learn what is necessary to be free. Secondly, to develop the kind of disciplines and stance that's necessary for us to be free. And thirdly, you know, like to be organized. So this month-long intensive, cadre intensive study was designed to bring that about. And I think we're on a good road. Just if you listen to the four people who you just met, and the striking thing, one of the striking things about the four people is the youth of most of them. And so we're talking about, in many instances, people in their 20s. And another striking thing, of course, is the just the valiant, incredible participation by African women in this process. And with this combination of young people and women, we know that we're looking at the future of a real, genuine revolutionary movement.
And not only that, Chairman, that speaking of the youth, that these four young comrades at their ages have made the sacrifice to take a month out of their lives to travel, as in the case of a comrade Magda, to travel over 4,000 miles from Stockholm, Sweden, to be here and to be a part of this intensive. And as someone who has also traveled across the pond is Secretary General Louise Kinshasa. Louise, what is your responsibility as Secretary General of the African Socialist International?
First of all, I'm responsible to the organization, to the party, just like every member. We all have to carry the decisions and the will of the party. But as you said, I'm the Secretary General. It also means that I have to be able to take on the tasks assigned to me because of the position I am. I do play an organization, the Secretary General.
What are some of these tasks?
Yeah, which basically means that I have to be prepared to come to this training and to be able to participate in this training with the intent to go out there and implement, carry out the decision that will allow me to be Secretary General of the ASI, which basically means ensure that the constitution, for example, of the ASI that requires us to have the African National Women Organization, to have like the African International Student Organization, things like that. Basically, what's in the report the chairman made, there are some mandates that need to be carried out by the African Socialist International. And that's basically where my part or my role comes in. And which it means that being here, it makes me more capable, more fit to carry out those decisions laid out by the Congress that I, as the Secretary General of ASI, I have to make sure they are carried out.
What impact has this intensive had on you?
Very, very, very positive. Nobody can say that they have been here after 4 weeks and that they're leaving the same way they came in. No, everyone where I came here, myself, definitely, I can feel a difference in all levels. Physically, you feel a difference. Emotionally, you feel very, very, very happy, very high, as the young people say. And in terms of what you do when I leave here, I'm much clearer than what I came in. Mm-hmm. And also the confidence is definitely very high because I've been able to spend time with my comrade, with my leadership. And this process of 4 weeks has definitely enabled me to be more capable, you know, by the time I return to London.
Comrade O'Malley Shatella, why is African internationalism important to us?
It's important for a number of reasons. For one thing, any genuine movement for freedom has to be informed by some kind of theory, some kind of revolutionary guide. What is it that we are fighting for? Otherwise, it's just some spontaneous movement that produces opportunism up and down the line. It allows you to accept anything you do as being successful. African internationalism demands a scientific approach to our struggle. It is a combination of both theory and action. We say that African internationalism is a theory of practice. And so what it does is it provides us a scientific approach to our struggle. And that is critical. And it provides us with the ideological basis for uniting African people, and particularly African workers and poor people around the world into a common trajectory so that all of us, every place, can end up knowing what it is that we are fighting for. And that's really important because African internationalism informs us that African people, black people everywhere, are part of a single nation, that we are not a different nations in different places around the world. And that means if we are a single nation, then we need to recognize we have a common history and a common future ahead of us. And Marcus Garvey, you know, helped to explain to us that profound problem and contradiction that we're confronted with as a people is that of organization. And if you don't know who you are, then you can't organize. You can't organize yourself if we are ignorant of the fact that black people who are in Haiti and black people who are in London and black people who are in Stockholm and Oslo and Sierra Leone and Houston, Texas are part of the same nation. You can't achieve that kind of organization. African internationalism informs us that we are part of the same nation, and therefore it enables us to go and organize black people wherever we are to win our freedom against a common enemy. African internationalism explains to us that the basis for the condition that we find ourselves in as Africans, where we suffer from poverty, where we suffer from oppression and ignorance and violence on a regular basis, that there is a reason for it. And it is not what our white imperialist enemies nor Barack Hussein Obama have told us that it is. It's not some ineptitude inherent or otherwise in black people. It is, in fact, a consequence of the white world building itself, building the modern economy of today through enslaving African people, colonizing us, stealing our labor, our culture, our resources, and feeding themselves and their children at the expense of us and our children. So African internationalism is extremely important. It is important also because it allows us to know that if we are going to be free, it is going to be as a consequence of the African workers and poor peasants, the ones who have been most victimized historically by this process, this relationship we have with white power, are going to have to come to power. The African working class is going to have to become the African ruling class, because the fact is that every struggle we've ever been involved in, whether it's on the plantations where Malcolm makes his distinction between the house Negroes and the field Negroes, whether it has been, you know, in the civil rights movement in Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, where the Negro middle class always spoke for the movement, and where you now have situations that talks about people being integrated, but the workers and the poor people who suffered the casualties in the process of fighting this struggle end up with nothing, and sometimes worse off than we were before. So we recognize that the African workers and poor people have to benefit from this, but not only benefit, if there's going to be a future, it is going to be a future because the African workers and poor peasants become the leaders in the new society that we're fighting to create.
You touched on it very lightly a moment ago, Chairman, and one of the primary, I feel, discussions that was made during this intensive is that you have said that we are one African nation opposed to those who may categorize us otherwise. Just expound on that, please, and I'm going to ask you, Comrade Luwesi, to put an appendage to that.
Yeah, we are one nation, and we've been convinced that we've been given all kinds of false national consciousness. To say false national consciousness sometimes is an exaggeration, because to be a Negro is not even to be a national consciousness, it's to be some kind of racial consciousness. To be, we are Haitians and we are black Brits and Afro-Swedes and just a whole array of things. And what that does is obscures in the first place that we do have a common history, and we're coming from a place, common place, that results in our conditions wherever we are. Africa was assaulted. There would be no African people in Sweden in the conditions that we are in, or in France or Spain or in the United States in the conditions that we are in, or in Africa in the conditions that we are in, if Africa had not been attacked. Africa was assaulted, and then African people were captured or dispersed around the world. Africa was captured and carved up into all of these phony states and so-called nations, and it has obscured our identity and the commonality of our struggle and the commonality of our enemy. So we are fighting over here as Haitians, we're fighting over here as Jamaicans, we're
and trying to win something,
and fighting each other, because mm-hmm. we don't even know of the commonality. So the recognition of ourselves as a nation is a fundamental question. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous that because I speak French and live in France, that I should assume or feel a closer affinity to the French colonizer, oppressor, than I do with an African who is in Brazil who speaks Portuguese, because the white people who dominated us there speaks Portuguese. So it's just, it doesn't make any sense. And the recognition of our common nationality is something that contributes, as we've talked about before, our ability to organize to solve a common collective problem. And it also requires us to recognize that Africa is our national homeland, and that the source of our contradictions began with the assault on Africa itself. It didn't begin in Haiti. It didn't begin in Mississippi or Alabama. Mm-hmm. It started in Africa, where we were snatched up and our whole mother country, our motherland, was assaulted and stole, everything stolen from it, including its most valuable resource, which are the human resources that's been scattered around the world. It's built a tremendous amount of wealth for white power.
Comrade Luizzi.
Yeah, you can see that if you look at our African people, it doesn't matter where we are, one thing is definitely true. Is absolute is that the African people are oppressed people. It doesn't matter if you go to Brazil, if you're looking for oppressed people, you're going to point to Africans and possibly the indigenous people. Mm-hmm. If you come to the United States looking for oppressed people, you're going to point to African people and possibly the Mexican and the indigenous, the one of Mexico who don't speak Spanish, so-called Indian. But you will show the Africans are oppressed people. You go to France, you will see the same thing, the same phenomenon. Basically, what I'm trying to say, we are people who have not achieved power as a people, and that's absolute. It doesn't matter if we have a president in Africa, in each country, or a president who is Negro in the White House. It does not change the reality that black people are oppressed people with no mm-hmm. power. And no black person who is honest can deny that. And this also is a part of the sameness that speaks to who we are. Because yes. if we achieved power anywhere else, and our power should be our power everywhere we are, and that's the should be the case. And also, you hear Africans, if they are from the U.S., if they go to the Caribbean, they will say, "Wow, you just look like my cousin. You mm-hmm. look like just somebody I saw in the neighborhood," which mm-hmm. is also true. And the reason being, because we are the same people.
Absolutely.
You don't look like me or my cousin because you're some alien. No, you look like my cousin because we are one and a piece.
Absolutely, because I can tell you in 1999, I went to Senegal, yeah. I saw some brothers there, man, as I've said, man, they look just like me.
Oh, yeah.
So they say, "Ron, you got to be Wolof."
Exactly.
If you've just joined us, you listen to Africa Live here on the Uhuru Radio Network. I'm your host for this week, Ron Bob Semple. And I'm sure you probably are just waiting to give us a call to probably chat with my two guests, Chairman Amalia Shetela and Secretary General Luizzi Kinshasa. But our program this week has been pre-recorded, so we are not live here on Sunday, but you can also listen to a rebroadcast during the week. You can always log on to Uhuru News or uhururadio.com and check our schedule as to when Africa Live will be rebroadcast.
Brother Ron,
yes.
may I just add a bit to that?
Please.
Because I think what is also important is to recognize the extreme brutality that has been necessary to take away our freedom and control our people.
Hmm.
And it is a brutality that people would struggle to try to believe if the information were put before them. But the extreme bestiality that came about that resulted in our conditions all around the world and the wealth and consolidation of what we now know as a European or white nation. But I think what is also important and by that, we mean the concentration camps that were developed. As you know, we did a study recently on the situation, the rebellions of African people who were controlled by the British in Kenya, mm-hmm. and the concentration camps that were created, and thousands of Africans stuffed into concentration camps to try to make sure that we didn't win our freedom. And same thing happened in various places around the world. And the reality is that Africans have been resisting for 600 years. You think about that. I mean, it's what was it? It was 1415 when the Portuguese landed in Africa. And we've been fighting for 600 years. And when you see the prisons in America stuffed with all these Africans, it's a part of the continuous oppression that's absolutely necessary to control the people from whom you've stolen everything. Stole their freedom, their culture, their identity, you know, their resources, their land, everything. And people have been fighting, even if they've lost consciousness of why we are still fighting. And so all of these people are in prison, and people are talking to us about criminals, and that's why you're in prison, because you're a criminal. No, we're in prison because the criminal controls the state, that apparatus that can punish people for upsetting the status quo. And that is disturbing the monopoly of power and the monopoly of resources that's in the possession of the capitalist colonial powers that came to being. But just think about that, 600 years, 600 years of resistance, 600 years of no let up, no freedom, of just brutal oppression, exploitation, 600 years, no matter where we live in the world, African people have been resisting. That's a hell of a long time.
Talking about resilience.
It's, yeah, it is. Resilience, and also we will benefit from this experience because collectively it is this experience of resources, as we begin to sum it up, that's going to be responsible for our victory over our oppression and our oppressors.
Comrade Luizi, one of the presentations that you delivered during the intensive was on the Haiti Revolution. How did this particular revolution challenge the entire political economy of the planet?
It did so in a very serious way, because slavery was the cornerstone of the emerging world capitalist system. The pedestal of it is the enslavement of Africans and, of course, the entombments, as Karl Marx put it, of the indigenous people in the mines and so on. And having the Africans in Haiti to have made that revolution, the only successful revolution made by the slave workers, was a threat to the entire system. Because here you have every slave plantation, they have now a model. They have now an objective. And also have something is real. It's not something that wishing, you know. Now you begin to think, I can win it. We can destroy that slave plantation. And the slave plantation owners also know in the brain of all Africans is Haiti in the brain. So that's a serious threat to the existence of slave plantation.
Wherever there's a counterfeit, there has to be an original.
Oh, definitely. So that was a tremendous historical event that changed the course of history. That's one aspect of it. And the other aspect is what it did just to change the power relations in the world. Mm-hmm. The United States, who used to be smaller, what is it is now, doubled overnight in terms of territory he gained, because the French, being defeated by the Africans in Haiti, could no longer have an army that can look after their colonial bounty, which was Louisiana, but not as we know it today. From what the chairman said, Louisiana, as it was then, was a bit more territories were part of it. Chairman can say more about that, Oklahoma and the other places. It was United States doubled the size. You know, we talk about the 13 original colonies, then the size doubled overnight because of the Haiti. Without Haiti, the United States would not be what it is today. So that's also, it's a big change. And also you have all the revolution that happened throughout South America and Central America. We're talking about the Bolivarian Revolution also, all that came about because the Haiti funded, supported, although it didn't get the reward expect to get, because Haitian revolution leaders, the only thing they wanted, the slavery to be abolished everywhere, the slave plantation system to go away everywhere, but that didn't happen in the case of Bolivar in Venezuela. Also, we have Guerrero, another African in Mexico, who also organized to end slavery in Mexico because of the inspiration they got from Haiti. So it was a really a world-changing event. And if, and the impact continue even today, because the way the United States and the French government and the rest of them relate to Haiti, they relate to Haiti the way they do, slander Haiti, continue to loot Haiti, to make sure Haiti doesn't go anywhere. Think about the immigration laws that are, you know, can accept the Cubans when they set foot on U.S. soil to be welcomed, but Haiti never welcome. And the main reason goes to the Haitian Revolution. They have never forgot that. So their contribution is just massive, and it's up to us now to honor what they did for us, because we owe Haitian Revolution, all the Africans there, the obligation to complete the African Revolution.
You want to add to that, Chairman, before we take a break?
Well, please. I think that's absolutely true. And in terms of the significance of the Haitian Revolution, and we mentioned that the world, the entire world economy, was organized around slavery. And Haiti defeated France, which was a powerful force in the world. And as Comrade Louisa just mentioned, the Louisiana Territory was not just Louisiana, but it areas of Minnesota, et cetera, was a part of the Louisiana Territory. And France couldn't hold that anymore. And France needed the money because of the defeat, and ended up having to pay, sell all of that to the U.S. Here they're selling people's lands and territories and people themselves for $15 million to the United States. That's an incredible thing. And so we cannot overstate the significance of the Haitian Revolution and the fact that the Haitian, the people in Africans in Haiti are being punished for that today by the imperialists who cannot tolerate what was a revolutionary black republic in the middle of a era where slavery, black people being enslaved, was the mainstay of the world economy. It was just powerful.
We're going to take a short break, and we're going to continue on this, the Haiti Revolution, and we talk about, you know, how Haiti was forced to repay France resources for quite a long time. You're listening to Africa Live. I'm Ron Bob Semple, sitting in this week. As I mentioned before, this has been a pre-recorded program, so unfortunately you would not be able to join us via telephone or Skype. We'll be back right after these words of importance.
The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is having its international conference in Philadelphia on August 16th and 17th, and you are invited. It's all happening at Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles at 832 North Broad Street. Theme of the conference is Resist U.S. Wars and Occupations in the U.S. and Abroad. Reparations Now. Learn from Chairman Omali Yeshitela of the African Socialist International. See Ron Bob Semple as Marcus Garvey. Hear Glenn Ford speak on Ukraine and the Crisis of Empire. Listen to Lisa Davis expose the health attack on our community. The conference is free and open to the public. For more information, call 727-821-6621. Again, 727-821-6621, or visit blackisbackcoalition.org. Don't forget, August 16th and 17th in Philadelphia. Black is back.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
Here's edutainment on the water you should not miss. It's the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise for 6 days from December 14th through 20th, 2014, aboard the Carnival Breeze leaving out of Miami, Florida, and stopping in Grand Turk, Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and Nassau, Bahamas. Edutainment on board will feature Omali Yeshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International, and renowned actor Ron Bob Semple with The Spirit of Garvey. For more details and to place your booking for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call Freedom Horizons Travel Agency at 866-708-4009, the exclusive travel agency for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise. Log on to uhurulegacycruise.org for itinerary and pricing information. Call Freedom Horizons today at 866-708-4009, 866-708-4009, or visit uhurulegacycruise.org, because if you miss it, you'll regret it.
Tune into Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Uhuru Radio Network. We examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. If you're not listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network, then your radio is not on.
Hi, I'm Felicia Prasad, and I encourage you to support the Uhuru Radio Network because it's independent, it's community, and it's pro-black.
This is Alan Bomar Jones. The Uhuru Radio Network gives a voice to the voiceless and stands for freedom for African people everywhere. Support it with your contribution today.
Hi, I'm CCH Pounder. African Millennium Foundation, AMF, is an organization committed to the social and economic empowerment of the people of Africa, providing women and children with the tools necessary to achieve self-sufficiency. AMF funds grassroots organizations to provide health, education, economic development, and social change in some of the poorest areas in Africa. 11 million African children have been orphaned as a result of AIDS. That gives us 11 million chances to improve the life of a child. Please join me at 1amf.org to learn more.
This is Max Rameau with Take Back the Land and the Omojo Village. You are listening to uhururadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Ishitela's new book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman Omali's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700, and your copy will be personally signed by the author. Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom.
Thank you very much, Alan Bomar Jones. You're tuned into Africa Live. I'm Ron Bob Semple with you, sitting in as your host this week. And chatting with me are the chairman of the Uhuru Movement, Chairman Omali Yeshitela, and the Secretary General of the African Socialist International, Luwesi Kinshasa. You did hear that promo, the Back is Black International Conference, which will be held in Philadelphia on August 16th and 17th. The conference will be held under the slogan, Resist U.S. Wars and Occupations in the United States and Abroad, Reparations Now. It will be held at the Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles, a movement institution, located at 832 North Broad Street in Philadelphia. You also heard a promo of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. I'm holding a copy of this book. I know it's radio, but that's the power of radio, that it opens your mind. And this book has been written by the chairman, and it has been used as the core of this intensive here at the Uhuru House for the last 4 weeks. And we're going to talk a little bit about this book in a while, but I'd just like us to just finish up just before we took that break. We were talking about the Haitian Revolution. And Comrade Louise, if you can share with us the fact that Haiti was forced to repay France resources for almost a century and a quarter.
Yes, we know that, as we said, the African Revolution, well, that's what the Haitian Revolution was the threat to the existence of the parasitic world economy. And evidence of it is that France is dependent on what we produce. And the decision coming from the white power leaders, not just France itself, they all gang together, the US, the British, all of them, that Haiti has to pay a compensation to France for loss of property and the loss of resources that France is supposed to get from Haiti.
So how much was that compensation?
The France requested 50 million francs in gold, which is equivalent of today of $90 billion dollars. Which
that's with a B.
Yeah, that's
a lot. $90 billion
today. And that's a lot of money. And here, the interest, I don't know who fixes the interest. It might change depending on what the interest is fixed. And it took us from 1825 to 1947, 122 years. So every year we have to go and pay France, every single year. And it's just incredible. The pain, just the one who's in charge of treasury has to go through, because if that is not paid, we are not part of the world economy. So basically, Haiti cannot trade with Venezuela, with Costa Rica, all those countries around Haiti. There will be no trade because the navies of the U.S., the navy of the British, the navy of the French, all white power carry their mission seriously. That you don't pay, you don't trade. And that was the punishment for making that revolution. And that crippled us for 122 years. We couldn't develop because the only thing we do, just during the slavery days, we produce, and knowing very well what we produce, end up to build French hospital, French schools, French road, make the money of the French rulers. And then they come out and say Haiti is the most poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And nobody has the courage to come and say it's poor because we looted it for hundreds and for hundreds of years. And that's why Haiti is what it is for. They don't say that.
Comrade O'Malley, has there been a concerted effort made to make sure that this information that Comrade Louise is talking about is not known to us en masse?
There's been a concerted effort to make that unknown, but also during the time frame that we're talking about, from the period of 1915 to 1934, the United States invaded Haiti. they were in Haiti from 1915, 1934, the United States Marines. And while there, they robbed the Haitian treasury. They took every bit of gold that was in the treasury. Can you imagine this? When they took all the gold, yep, and they brought it back to the United States. But in addition, they forced the Africans at gunpoint to change the Constitution. The Africans refused to change the Haitian Constitution because under the Haitian Constitution, no white person could own land in Haiti. And under the Haitian Constitution, in order to be a Haitian citizen, one had to be declared black. So even if one were Polish and who fought on the side of Haiti during the revolution and some other white people, in order to be a citizen, they had to be declared black.
And to be able to purchase land.
To be able to purchase land, they had to be black. So the United States government actually tried to force them to make the change. They refused to do it, and the United States changed the damn Constitution, took all the gold out of the treasury, and then blames Haiti today for being poor. And it's absolutely necessary to do that because Haiti, they used to refer to Haiti as the Pearl of the Antilles for what it was given. It fed France. It fed France. France ate, and the children of France were able to eat in part of what was being produced by Africans who were enslaved in Haiti. Now they declare that we're not able to feed ourselves in Haiti. And, of course, it is the fact that Haiti became this black republic that defeated white power in a very decisive way. It defeated the best army in Europe at the time, which was Napoleon's army. Mm-hmm. Napoleon was considered the greatest general, and they were in Napoleon's army met a horrible defeat in Haiti. So it was an example that was intolerable. And even today, for African people to know what we did in Haiti, because that gives you ideas. If you know what you did do in the past, you know what the possibilities are, and that gives, of course, us ideas that the imperialists cannot tolerate.
And may I just add?
Yes, yes, please, please.
The U.S. occupation, that's 1915, 1934, I think.
Yes.
During that time, we have not yet finished paying the so-called compensation to the French ruling class. We that finished in 1947.
Yes.
So you have a doubling of our paying. We go to pay the French, and the U.S. also has taken control of our treasury. I mean, these just...
It's pushed us back into slavery.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It is, because everything that's produced, everything, nothing is produced for African people who there is all produced to go out to white people. We made baseballs for them. We actually, there was literally a time when Africans had to sell their blood, where corporations from the United States were, people lined up to sell their blood in order to make some money that they might be able to eat with. And obviously, that wasn't always successful because we ended up eating mud pies.
That's right, mud pie.
Mud.
You know, and Chairman, I'm really glad that you brought up that baseball issue during one of the sessions at Intensive, because I've talked about it a lot. The fact that Haitians were making baseballs.
That's right.
And being paid 50 cents a week.
Yes.
And those baseballs, each of those baseballs was being sold for something like $3.58.
Yeah.
Each baseball now.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But the mere fact that they've been just pillaged and just used, you know, I mean, after all of these years. Now, Chairman, 2014 marks the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League that was founded by Marcus Messiah Garvey on July 20th of 1914.
And the 127th
birthday.
Anniversary of the birthday.
Absolutely. August 16th. And August 16th and 17th, the Black is Back Coalition will be, as the promo mentioned, will be held in Philadelphia at the Uhuru House Furniture Collectibles. Chairman, on many fronts, Marcus Garvey and the UNIA and the ACL has been linked to Pan-Africanism and not to anti-imperialism, as you have always expressed. Talk about that, please.
I think that's been necessary for a lot of people who are afraid of the revolution, who don't have the same interest that Garvey had in actual freedom and actual self-government. And Garvey was an anti-imperialist. He hated imperialism everywhere. Of course, he was an African, and just as I'm an African, and I'm an African internationalist, I'm not just an internationalist in the abstract, and Garvey was an internationalist, but not in the abstract either. He was in Africa, of Africa, and he was suffering the consequences of African people, and he had to solve that problem. But Garvey, you know, he supported the revolution in Russia. He supported he sent letters of congratulations to Trotsky and to Lenin with the success of that revolution. He was actually struggled for the working people. As you know, he was organized, he was a union organizer at a certain time in his history. So Garvey was not just some mysterious black person who was out there. He was actually one of the greatest anti-imperialists of that era. When I say of that era, I'm talking about the era of Ho Chi Minh, who attended meetings at Liberty Hall in New York that conducted by Marcus Garvey.
138th Street.
I'm talking about an era of people like Pancho Villa, Sun Yat-sen of China. I mean, this was the era that Garvey existed in, where struggles for national liberation were roiling, and Garvey created this magnificent organization of Africans all over the world. It was greater than the Communist International in terms of its size, the scope, and its impact on the world. It made imperialism tremble all over the world. And so Garvey was not just a guy. You know, he's not just a black guy talking about Africa. He had a program. Yeah. He had built a military. He had built a nurses' corps. He had built factories, industry.
Black Doll Factory.
He was talking about the recording studios.
Long before. What's the Black Doll something bean?
Cabbage patch.
Cabbage patch.
You know, so Garvey was doing all of this. And Du Bois founded the Pan-Africanist Congress as an attack on Garvey. And a lot of people like to cover that over and say, well, you know, it was a personality difference. There was no personality difference. Du Bois actually worked with the United States State Department, conspired with them to go to Liberia and work to make sure that the land that Garvey had purchased so that he could have a beachhead on the continent of Africa would be taken away from him. He actually worked with the United States State Department to say, give me a ship. This is Du Bois. Give me a ship so I can somehow put it in the Black Star entity and help to destroy it. This was what Du Bois did. Du Bois was a middle class petty bourgeois intellectual that never had a mass organization. The only time the Pan-Africanist Congress developed anything like a mass organization was in 1945. It was in Manchester after the Du Bois, the Communist Party, the U.S. government, federal government, and everything they could to crush the Garvey movement, jail Garvey, get him out of the country and what have you. And then Du Bois was able to participate with George Patbour, who was an ex-communist, anti-communist, to build the Pan-Africanist Congress that happened in Manchester in 1945. That was the first time it ever was mass people involved in that, including Garvey's wife, who attended, and she said she went there to complete her husband's work. So a lot of people didn't understand that this was not an extension of the work that Marcus Garvey had begun around Africa. People wanted to unite with Africa. And so looks like the only thing that was still left was this thing that Du Bois and Patmore was doing at the time. But it was an anti-Garvey, anti-working class effort that was being made, that was being led by Du Bois.
I'm glad you brought that up, because there has been this I don't know if a misunderstanding, but this alignment between Garvey and Du Bois, because even my presentations, I've been asked, you know, I mean, you know, so what is it about Garvey and Du Bois? You know, after all, you know, he died in Ghana, and he went to Ghana and died, and he admitted that he was wrong as to what he said about Garvey. Again, our history, man, a lot of us don't know the depths of our history. And as I've said during this intensive, you know, that I have been hanging on every word that has been uttered from your mouth, mm-hmm. Chairman, and others who made presentations. And speaking of Garvey, Comrade Luezi, you currently reside in London. And Garvey met his demise on June 10th in 1953. He died at 53, 1940. He died at the age of 53. Do Africans in London, or are Africans in London, aware of the impact that Garvey had while living there in London for however long? It wasn't very, very long.
The impact he had when he was alive, when he was living there.
Yes.
You mean, I really don't know
okay.
very much. What I've heard is that he was that poor, isolated basically in the 40s. And the black community has now moved and massively as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I've heard. And as you know, he died of sickness,
yeah.
of pneumonia.
Chairman, you know, you've talked a lot about, you know, when Africans just wait until August 16th or August 17th, you know, to make this big hullabaloo about Garvey. And they're in London, I think October is the month that they celebrate Garvey
Black
during
History.
Black History Month.
Yeah.
And that's a whole Garvey month.
Yeah. Talking about the impact of Garvey, of course, in London, is huge. I know, for example, on the 17th of August, most of the black organization do organize some kind of meeting or celebration to commemorate Marcus Garvey a birthday. For example, you know, next month, there will be meetings, marches, things like that, just to commemorate the 100 years of UNIA. By saying that, what Chairman just talked about is still the same also in London, where people who call themselves Pan-Africanists deliberately, they know Garvey gives them legitimacy in the eyes of the people. So they claim that Garvey is one of them. Garvey is a Pan-Africanist. That make it in a big way. If you see a Pan-Africanist in London, it's likely to say it's claiming Garvey and putting Du Bois together. But because of what the party has done, African internationalism is doing, it's becoming difficult to associate Garvey and Du Bois and put them in the same camp. And that struggle is not over yet, but the struggle we are winning, because we should not allow people to equate Garvey and Du Bois. They're all doing the same thing for the cause of African people. That's not true. Du Bois, from the very beginning, has always been an ally for U.S. imperialism. Everything he did up to the 1945 Manchester Conference, as the chairman said, was organized with their help. Consciously, the help is sought from them to help him to organize. As you know, anybody who organizes black people with the help of white power leaders is no a movement for freedom. It's a reform some sort. It's an African bourgeoisie movement. And that's what Du Bois is. So Garvey is in the opposite camp, because Garvey did not seek the help of any white power leaders. Mm-hmm. He went to the workers, to the people, to the poor African people. Let's organize. Let's put our numbers together so we can achieve our own freedom.
You mentioned the word imperialism. And Chairman, I made a couple of notes during one of the sessions of the intensive. And you said that the U.S. people don't mind imperialist power. They just don't want to see it. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's that they don't mind imperialist wars. They don't mind the people getting killed in Vietnam or Palestine or any other place, because it rewards them. They just don't want to see it. And the only time you will see them being upset and opposed to it, if it's on television where they have to recognize it, because it's like looking into a mirror then.
That's right.
It's like looking at their handiwork. But as long as they don't have to see it, they're cool with it. And even if they know it's happening, if they don't have to see it, then it's all right with them. And I think that, you know, relative to this Du Bois-Garvey difference, we should be clear. This is not something that's being developed after the fact. Both Du Bois and Garvey were clear that they were not in the same camp and said it, and said it. And Du Bois said, I have nothing to do with that Back to Africa Marcus Garvey thing. And Garvey said, I am not a Pan-Africanist. They were very clear on this. So this is not something we are creating now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And any of those guys who are Pan-Africanists and students of Du Bois and Marcus Garvey, they know that Garvey and Du Bois both said they were not a part of the same camp. This thing that they've come up now after the fact, well, Du Bois learned his lesson. You know, he said he made a mistake and he died in Ghana. Du Bois was one of the most educated people in the world, bar none. He had a European white education. He was a brilliant man. He was a brilliant writer. He did great work. This history, this thing of Africa that he did was magnificent, eloquent, very important literary product. But Du Bois made the statement that this Garvey was crazy, because there were places in Africa that we can't even live. Black people in this country say can't even live in Africa, you know, because black people in America. I mean, it's the most ridiculous statement, you know. This was the petty bourgeoisie. This was a person who became radicalized because he had all of this white education. All of this white education, and still he was not accepted by America, and he became radicalized by that. He was the NAACP that created the Talented 10th program, and his Pan-Africanist movement was a Talented 10th movement, a movement of the elite, not of the masses of the people. And one of the reasons he hated Garvey, because Garvey had his hands and feet in the midst of the unwashed masses of people, black people who wanted to be free.
Comrades, we've just got about 7 minutes left in the broadcast. And Chairman O'Malley, I'd like you to talk about this book that you wrote, your latest, on An Uneasy Equilibrium. How important is this book?
It's a critically important book, I believe. Some of what's in there can be found in other things I've written and said over a number of years, but in many ways I think it's been pulled together and it's a more coherent message than before. And I think one of the critical things that we're seeing in this book is that we characterize as the uneasy equilibrium. There's a great contest that's afoot right now between the past and the future. And the past has been one of colonialism, slavery, oppression, world domination by white power, and the future progress is represented by the peoples who are fighting against that, whether they're in Afghanistan, Palestine, whether they're throughout the African world in the ghettos and the colonial ghettos and barrios in this country, whether they're in Haiti and various other places. That's the future being fought for. The future is being characterized in many instances by white power as terrorists. And of course, they are terrorized by the future because the future will come at their expense. All the wealth, all the richness, every hope and dream that the white people have in the whole world requires the continuing oppression and exploitation of black people and oppressed people around the world, which is why even as they do their little phony commercials about send 50 cents to this poor starving black child that you see while the music in the background is playing Amazing Grace, even while they watch that, they celebrate the fact that they are a part of a world where 80% live in trying to survive off less than 10 U.S. dollars a day.
During one of the sessions, Comrade Luezi, you analyzed sections of this book, Uneasy Equilibrium. What really stood out for you in this book that has really solidified your quest for freedom for African people?
Yeah, asking me a question like someone is in front of diamond and gold and say which one you want to go for. the first thing is that you can see the downfall of a parasitic capitalist white system. You can see that. And the book basically is the link, as the chairman just said, between the past and the future. The world is at a turning point. And as you know, when you reach a critical point, there are a lot of things happening at a critical point. And so it also brings a lot of confusion, because particularly for the oppressed, to understand that this is the time. It's the time of the oppressed. And the book clearly shows that. That's our time. It's the time of the oppressed. It's the time for the oppressors to be defeated, because all the conditions are ripe for the Africans and other oppressed people to be in charge of their own struggle. And it's a just struggle. It's a struggle to kick off the pedestal upon which the parasitic capitalism was built on and is maintained. And everything you can see going in the news validate that from the need to make the war in Ukraine, or from the wars going on in Palestine, and from the U.S. rushing into Africa, trying to use every opportunity from Boko Haram and so on to facilitate the agenda. Everything points toward the conclusion of the books. But the most important thing is for the Africans, what to be done. Hmm. For us to seize the time as is laid out in the book, build a party. That's the tool to seize power. If we don't build it, we will not be able to seize power as the African working class. Something else will happen instead of that. And that's the critical point. The question of building a revolutionary party. That is the historical mission of every honest African on earth, is to be part of the revolutionary process by joining the party.
Chairman Amalia Shetela, in a couple of minutes we have left, your closing words as to your reflections on this 4 weeks of intensive cadre development?
I think it's going to prove historical. I think that the people who attended this school that we've just done, the school of 2014, will be remembered forever by the work that they will do in the various places in the African world, by the influence that they will create all over the African world. And again, I want to unite with Comrade Luezi Kinshasa. It reinforces our recognition of the need to build the party, the instrument that will lead to the liberation of our people. And I think this cadre intensive school gives us some of the best candidates that will go out into the world to fulfill that mission.
Chairman Omali Oshetelo, Secretary General Louise Kinshasa, thank you very much for joining me here on Africa Live. I'm Ron Bob Simple with you. Stay tuned for other programming here on Uhuru Radio Network. Later on, you can be tuned into Diasporic Music with Brother Richmond coming to you from Toronto, Canada. And later on this evening and also during the week, you can tune into yours truly with Golden Sunday Sounds, where we relive those romantic love songs of yesteryear. I'm Ron Bob Semple. Enjoy the rest of your day. Back to black.
It's a shame these things they see on TV. That's no place to learn history. We gotta open the books, read between the lines. We need an education that'll free the mind. Talking about culture, the way that we think. It even has effects on the things we drink. It's the clothes we wear, the way we walk, the looks we use, and how we talk. It's what determines all choices chose, sets priorities and plans all goals. A strong foundation based on the past, effective in the present, guaranteed to last.